settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Nick and Sylvie Avery.
This is Sylvie Avery, and welcome to Spirit's Work, the metaphysical and spiritual information show that is designed to stretch your mind and help you to think outside of the box. On today's show, as usual, my husband Mick will be deep trance channeling, and today we are going to be talking about gender and spiritual pathways. So if you'd like to join us with a question, it's not a readings show, but you can actually get in touch with us and have a reading with Gregory at another time if you'd like to go to our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com. But for tonight, we're going to be talking about other topics that might interest you. And the number is free phone in the USA. It's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's 501-530-876-3222.
Well, hi, I'm Mick Avery, as well as Spirit's Work on the wonderful and ever-present bbsradio.com every Monday at 7 p.m. PST. We have another radio show which is called Spirit Teaching, and you can hear that live on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 7 p.m. PST. If you'd like to know more about us, our books, maybe book an Akashic reading or buy a CD or any of the other services we have to offer, we suggest you go visit our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com, and also at www.spiritsworkradio.com. Our Sylvie said, I am a deep trance medium, and each week live on the show, I channel Gregory Hay, who had an earth life 300 years ago. I have the ability to completely hand over my body to the spirit world so they may use it to speak through. And I know absolutely nothing about what has happened during this time. When I go into the deep trance state, my conscious mind and my spirit are transported elsewhere by the spirit team who work with us, and then they bring me back when the spirit communicator leaves. I not only miss the whole show, but I very rarely remember where it was they took me either, so it's not like shamanism or anything like that. But then, anyway, that's my job, so without further ado, I'm going to hand you back to Sylvie, and have a great show, everyone, because I'm going to sleep. Bye.
Okay. Gregory is the spokesperson for a group of spirits of higher intelligence called the White Cloud Group, and they consist of many great minds as well as ordinary people. Between them, they have access to vast knowledge and insight. They've come to bring their teachings because there is a need for us to have understanding beyond the constraint of our human minds. And the subject matter that we cover, whether in our books or on our radio shows, is limitless and will hopefully help you to become more knowledgeable and better informed as to the nature of your existence on Earth, as well as your continued life after physical death. So today's show, we have a show suggestion from Ursa. Thank you, Ursa. She has sent us a few questions for this, and This is something that I forgot to mention, that if you do want us to discuss something, a topic of discussion, something that is interesting to you, then do get in touch. And if you've got any questions to go with the show topic, all the better. Then we can get through them a lot quicker if I've got some questions already, and we can make a show around that. Because the spirit world come to talk to you about things that you want to know, and this is why they come, basically. They don't come to just lecture to us. We are also on secondlife.com on Sunday, the 28th of September, between 1 and 2 p.m. Pacific. That's 4 to 5 Eastern, at the Mystic Academy in the New Oracle Temple. So you can join us there as well and have another interactive session with Gregory. So, I do believe Gregory's here.
With love and light and blessings be, my dear friend.
Thank you. Hello. Okay, well, this is going to be really interesting, actually. Talking about the fact that Ursa, I'll just read Ursa's first question to set us off, actually. Basically, she said, could we do a show around the fact that it seems to be that for some reason there are so few women that seem to be endowed with deep wisdom and connection to a spiritual path on the earth plane, except in the context of religion, as in she was actually trying to find spiritual deities and that sort of thing, gurus, you know, and she says that, is it because of past events where a woman must be kept, it must keep her spiritual path entirely to herself, disguised and hidden and secretive in order not to be punished for it, and this is something that's become, you know, like a genetic thing where women are no longer able to easily pass any of their original spiritual wisdom onto their daughters or anything like that. So she's talking, you know, in quite a directed way there, if you know what I mean, in the fact, you know, of spiritual leaders, basically.
Yes. Well, of course, my dear friend, you have to look at the whole situation, the raft of religions that are presently endemic upon the world, on your side of life, in order to understand that all of these different bases have, in fact, in a sense, tried to remove women from their whole hierarchical system, purely and simply leaving it in the standpoint of men, of male figures, means to say, quite simply, that I suppose you could say, in a sense, that it's part of what caused the damage because of the wars and attrition, especially between mission-driven states of religion, means to say that they are more akin to waging war with one another than anything else. And so it appears to be that the whole situation of the quality of the wisdom that, shall we say, that comes from women is no different to that of males. In point of fact, I would say that most of the situation tends to be that men have to get into the understanding of their female side of life in order to have any wisdom at all.
Okay. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
I know that perhaps certain males will find this most difficult, but in point of fact, most in the state of mediums, for example, most mediums have to have a certain understanding of very deep sensitivity, may even be particularly not of one specific gender, but actually encompass both. This then gives them a certain understanding of perhaps being able to see further within their sensitivity than they would had they been only particularly one gender. We find this as well in the spirit world. It's quite strange, really, though it tends to be that males then actually adopt a far more signatory approach in the spirit world, having a much more fluid state, which actually comes from their more sensitive aspect of creation, that, which is a very interesting point, really, because you are not actually dealing with a logical, physical being in the spirit world, but actually rather something which it has just a pure memory of its earth logic. And so you are then dealing with a completely different system of events. So it means to say then that much of the way that you thought, for example, as a human being in physical life, once you come to our side of life, much of it is dissipated. I know full well that it will be perhaps there will be certain traits and characteristics which will remain. This is in part borne out by the way in which human beings bring messages through to loved ones and that kind of thing, and they'll talk about or even talk in the same way perhaps as they did when they were having a physical life, therefore providing evidence of the fact that it is them in their embodiment. And so oftentimes, however, you will have situations where once a human being comes to our side of life and the flesh is torn off, as it were, there is no more bravado, there is no more situations of deep resentment, but perhaps the agonies that human males tend to go through in their single-minded and one-track thinking, but that actually they're much more accommodating in a global sense. That doesn't mean to say that women automatically have that sense. There are some women throughout history, and those coming upon the situation of the world at large, in point of fact, who are extremely dominant and have a whole raft of male genetics, which then throw disarray into the mix, you see. So therefore, you then have a female being who is, in fact, extremely powerful and actually takes power from the male role side of themselves and actually enlarges it. It's oftentimes when you find that women are not actually suited in that way, and that perhaps they go past the post, if you like, of decency or whatever, and actually become so single-minded that they then lose the plot of sensitivity that, as women, they should have. I'm not saying that women are not allowed to be strong or anything like that, but that it can be, through the situation of the way in which energy works, that sometimes you may have women who actually become so single-minded that they lose the sight of their inner calm and their inner beauty, too.
Well, can it be something as well to do with, like, a pack instinct as well, how we like to follow the strongest person, and yet in this fact that it's a spiritual, if we're talking about spiritual leaders, they're usually very gentle people. I'm thinking, who can we think of here? On a different there's many varying different levels, isn't there? There's Mahatma Gandhi. He was a political leader and humanitarian that was a respected spiritual leader who used non-violent protest, didn't he?
And
he's somebody from the 1900s that we could talk about.
Yes, and of course there were all of those who had been at various times the enshrined Buddhist monk or whatever, you see. And so you have these situations too, where you have a person of a particular form and understanding of deep spirituality. However, I'm saying that the way in which the same situation has encased within women is oftentimes you do find that for some reason the role doesn't necessarily correlate. They can, it's like the wheels can come off the wagon in a different sense, and that does not denigrate women at all. I'm saying that women actually have, in the main, a lot more power than men have, you see? And in the past ancient histories, in fact, you look upon humanity and you will see throughout the priestess situation of both Egypt and of the Mayan culture, of the Incan culture, and many others, you will see, in fact, that females dominate the whole situation. If you look at other species, particularly wolves, for example, or different forms of primate, most primates have the same situation, that they're actually matriarchal societies, and they're there for that particular reason, because matriarchs tend to be far more empathic, far more harmonic en masse.
Stable, so,
yes.
Maybe.
Well, yes. And really, the whole situation of the male situation is really more about specific genetics and not necessarily their ability to think.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, these days we do have female priests, vicars, and that sort of thing. But then that's a job. That's not something that's been earned by, you know, a spiritual leader has usually earned their position, haven't they?
Yes,
you know
and, of course, even that is a great reluctance of the rest of that particular situation, yes.
Yes, that many
particular
don't like
caste, you see.
Absolutely, many don't like that. And yet, many of the revered women who have been a spiritual leader of type have been from underprivileged countries.
Yes. This is quite true, because women are generally tended to see to be seen as being, shall we say, champions of the people, because they have the sensitivity and understanding, whereas men tend to think in a very single-track, monosyllabic way. I expect there are a lot of women who are very pleased we're talking about this.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, if women are far more all-encompassing, then that just makes it even more interesting, doesn't it? That they are not more spiritual leaders. I mean, I know there's the whole children and raising the families situation that comes into it, doesn't it, really?
Yes, but that means to say, in point of fact, if you look at society as a whole, you are actually acknowledging there that women, it's not just child-rearing that women do, but they are also the multiplicit personality of the whole establishment and continuation of human beings at large. And by and large, it will be that there are male-dominated imprisoning laws which then enshrine that and make it so that they're only actually allowed to do that part and not anything else. That's really, I understand, where the breaks have been applied, in a sense, and how it is maybe that in the states of your present life, where you live now, and the time zone that you live in, that actually what's happening is that there is a certain sense of awareness which was not in existence, most certainly in the time when I was having a physical life, and before that, there were very few societies or situations of communities of human beings where human women were actually in the dominant feature. They were most likely to be totally subservient, as they are in many states of religion and in many countries on your side of life still now, particularly those with particularly backward thinking or deep-seated religious values of the past, which are actually locked in that whole situation. And therefore, you have this ridiculous situation of being dictated to by the whole male-structured society. That's part of the reason I understand as to not only just why it is you have the situation that you have globally, really, by and large, because it's something that has happened to dominate the system.
Yes, I mean, like Mahatma Gandhi, Mother Teresa, basically it's people that have walked the walk.
Yes.
They've actually done it. You know what I mean? They've
yes,
done it,
quite true.
So it's not a situation of just talking about it. So is it anything to do with, Ursa's question was about the fact of, has it become a genetic situation where women are no longer able to easily pass any of their original spiritual wisdom onto their daughters?
Well, there appears to be a sense of a void. I would not say that this is genetic, although there are certain aspects of genetic traits which can be passed on naturally, but many of the traits are really, if you peel off the outer layers, many of the traits are actually handed down through environmental exchange. Finding the situation of if wisdom itself, as an empathy of energy, if that is something which is not passed on to the next generation through women, it is usually because that something has happened to degenerate that energy. And I say this to degenerate it, so it means that perhaps the woman has either left much of the child rearing situation, perhaps to others, maybe. Maybe it is that the woman has had to go out to work again, so that the time allotted for the time that she pays in to the situation of being around her children is becoming more and more limited. Therefore, the structure and fabric that is supposed to be instilled into that child is left. This is part of the situation that you have at present, where many children, many offspring of current parents, are in fact becoming quite, deranged, quite, in fact, changed in respect of their behavior from the previous generation, quite simply because they cannot apply the same time or the same energy. Women are, I understand, working more, or they are in states of near collapse. Perhaps for some women who are kept in the home, in a sense, that they are, in a sense, disenfranchised with the rest of the community. Therefore, it means to say that their spirituality then seems to be something which is wholly, singularly their own, and it's not something that they then pass on. That, however, tends to be a very much of a blanket situation. In terms of what you really are looking at here is, as I say, situations of behavior. If you do not, as a woman, pass on the behavioral traits and the constant understanding of control and of also the possibilities of what empowers you, then you should be actually creating a better society, surely. And in point of fact, I understand women are generally more intelligent than men. So the situation, of course, is created in a much larger way because women are, by and large, able to multitask. They are able, very much the same as we do in the spirit world, to do more than one thing at any one time. But males tend to be singularly focused. So that means to say that the raft of what they don't see coming is actually a part of the pathway of disaster, which is why oftentimes it becomes that if women then take the male role predominantly in their lives and think in a single-track way, then the wheels come off the wagon, as it were, because they fail to see different events arising in their life and then cannot act accordingly. So part of what you are having here is the structure of society and how different situations become so that if you do not practice your whole life essence as a woman and not infect it with your children, but actually teach it and share with your children, then they are going to turn out as little monsters, really. And that's only purely and simply because of what you put into it. That's not something that's genetic. It is taught.
Okay, so it's environmental as well.
Absolutely so.
So basically, if and I know we've talked about this so often, but basically, if people had more time to dedicate to, shall we say, meditation and that sort of thing, be it whatever gender,
yes,
then we would have more spiritual leaders.
Yes, absolutely so. And the point is that the world will be a completely different place. I'm not citing here that women are naturally going to make better role models or indeed naturally make better leaders of countries. Absolutely. It can go to anyone's head whether they take upon themselves that role, and I'm certainly not seeing that there are particular references of goodness here.
And we're not saying either that spiritual leaders have to meditate or anything like that.
No.
But as we all know, that this is something that does raise your vibration towards that aspect of yourself.
Yes. Yes, perhaps so. And the point is then you are looking at a different way of balance towards the rest of the planet as well, its resources and the whole ecology.
Okay, I mean, you know, because there was Buddha, wasn't there?
There was, and still is.
And there still is. But there were so many that were men. The Wiccans had priestesses, didn't they, that they
yes.
used to worship or... can you talk a little bit about this situation?
Yes, well, that is very true. The situation of priestesses, of course, is endemic through many, many different cultures. Mm. And the point is that the way, of course, of the pharaohs was, in fact, also that their structure had the power base which was originated with women. The Roman structure as well, to a certain point, was actually ruled and attended by women. The whole situation of control was rested there, really. And that is, in a sense, a credit to the way in which it continued to flourish for such a very long time. And that's true also, not so much within the Druid situation, because the Druid situation was more male-dominated. And that, in point of fact, of course, in various parts of history, women were actually treated in much maligned, were treated with extreme pain, extreme lack of clarity by many males, particularly to do with witchcraft and that kind of thing. Different forms of witchery, of course, I understand. But generally, there has been a situation of male dominance within religious hierarchy, which has meant that they have found women to being very, that in a sense, it had been that they had found been feeling very vulnerable when women take control. There is no real logical reason for this, apart from the failed state of genetics that males then tend to go through. You see? So the situation then becomes that, and this is really a part of the behavioral aspect of it, that you are looking at the ways in which women behave generally when they are together. They're much more hands-on, much more that they can cooperate. Their cooperation between them means to say that they don't necessarily seek to have one particular leader, but rather that they act as a mass. And that's something that's very interesting. Males actually have to do a lot of work in order to really create response.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because, you know, women can not, you know, be quite bitchy as well.
Yes, I understand that, but that's usually because of there are situations of allegiance. Situations of allegiance usually arise because of the danger or the threat. Perhaps women who generally tend to feel somewhat isolated or, in fact, feel threatened in some way, then generally tend to take up the preservation role.
Okay.
And that's something that they will also instill in their children as well.
Hmm. But it's also a way of climbing up the pack, isn't it?
Well, yes. I understand what you are saying.
Mm.
So there are different traits that are very female, but that can take on a different life and a different situation of energy, particularly then those that become more threatened then tend to allow the male dominant role of energy coming to the foreground, you see.
But if you're a spiritual leader, you earn it by just being, don't you? By oozing this spirituality, and the people see in you something that is not anything that you can manufacture, presumably. You just are.
Well, yes, quite so, but that's really to do with the vibration state and to do with your resonance. So your resonant frequency is actually something which is becoming far more harmonic, for example, if it's at a higher frequency level. And I don't mean to say that as a way of that one person is higher than somebody else. However, it's really to do with the resonant frequency, so that the more that you give to others, the more that you create the situation of charismatic energy, which actually is oftentimes so difficult for human beings to create within themselves, most usually because it's something that they, through selfish understandings, tends to not be dominant within human society. You see, physical people that we observe from our side of life tend to be much more dominant within specific roles and take upon that, and in which case it will be that the resonant frequency of spiritual identity is perhaps become less and less. It's not something which is created in the right way. So then what happens? You have a person who is really understanding of their resonant frequency, is very much in touch with the whole vibrancy of what they need to get across, perhaps becoming even much more eloquent with words or whatever, and you will have a situation where emotion is infused with that eloquence and you are able to bring extreme clarity in the way that that a person talks. So, for example, you have a situation where you are not just writing speeches, but you are just reacting as a way of your voyage. So instead of writing a piece of a prayer, perhaps, but instead of that, you are not applying your imagination or intuition. You are creating the situation from the heart, from the heart of energy that you are. This then raises your resonant frequency and enables you to perhaps talk more sense, shall we say, than others would if they were not in that way of contact. This means to say that many women feel this empathy, feel this understanding, and then can voice it. Males also are sometimes able to do it, but it makes much more work for them to do that.
Well, if you're a spiritual leader of any gender, you earn it by being, okay, that we were just saying, but negativity of the modern world suffocates any spiritual vision or passion, maybe, would-be spiritual leaders this day and age, do you think? Or, well, there's always been war as
yes,
well, hasn't
so.
There? But maybe...
Yes, but generally the wars tend to be through the power of one over another, and it's all a matter of juggling, really, juggling to do with energy, to do with the way of dominance. Don't forget that, for example, in in all tribal areas of human existence, there have been wars created through the dominance of one tribe over another. It's nothing new in many respects. It's just that the reasons for doing it have changed. That's all.
Yes.
And that tends to dominate the whole situation of what you're looking at.
Yes, and if you think about Mahatma Gandhi, Mother Teresa, and that sort of thing, well, and I don't know if you would call Joan of Arc or Florence Nightingale, but not really, are they? They were just good people, weren't they? I mean,
yes.
This is what I mean, a spiritual leader, you know, how do you describe a spiritual leader, really? I mean, how long is a piece of string, really, isn't it? Everybody's view of it would be different, wouldn't they, if you asked them?
Yes, absolutely.
But I guess, can we talk a little bit about basically it being God's image? Man is in God's image so much, it comes up so much, doesn't it?
Yes, quite so.
But I'm sure that this really, really has a lot to do with it.
It's part of the central tenet of many people's aspirations, particularly to do maybe even with this, within the structure of the spirit world, when in actual fact it isn't that at all. It's purely been adorned that way. And so it will be that there are many different creatures in the spirit world who have a far greater fascination for spirituality than, and particularly in the spirit world, than human beings do. So this whole situation is, in a sense, that the hierarchy surrounds human beings because human beings are at the top of the food chain. That's the only reason. If you look at any other planet and its structure of hierarchy or the way that it evaluates what God is, you will see an image of their likeness. And that echoes purely and simply from the image of that particular being. I have to say, though, however, that in many different societies of religious structures, they have different icons. Cattle, cows, for example, are a representation of a godlike status, goddess-like status. The situation of monkeys also, and dogs too. The situation of wolves, whales even, can be oftentimes created in a very loving environment, even though that society may actually in turn eat them. You see, it's quite strange, really, that to venerate one creature as a part of their empathic culture, which surrounds and explains their whole situation of living and the way in which the whole system of species has evolved in order to create that as a worshipful emblem, and then they turn around and eat one.
Well, can we talk about, let's go back to the planets. The Greeks and Romans had planets as gods, didn't they?
Absolutely, I mean, so, yes. And also, of course, they had gods for various aspects of the earth as well. So there were gods of not just planets, but of the sea, of the sky, you see? So this whole situation was actually created through an understanding of the need to actually overcome the priestess role, in a sense. And much of these situations of deities were created in the, once again, in the empathic of there being a human evolution at the head of it. So, for example, Thor, the god of thunder and war, and also, of course, as being a part of Mars. This whole situation was really quite untenable. Why would it be a human being? Only purely and simply because that was the energy given to it, because that was how human beings could relate to their own environment as a way of them making sense of life. I understand that wholly, of course. It's been the way in which the whole situation has marched forward and is not least, in a sense, played out by the way in which the different healing patterns have been created. For example, with the whole situation surrounding various henge monuments. These were normally created as empathic regions of great power and stability. People were brought to these places for healing, for processes of healing, not necessarily by just priestesses, but by whole gatherings of unity. And that in itself created the harmonic energy, which was prevalent at that time, and that's still felt now. And that's a part of the situation, you see. If you go to any Greek ancient archaeological site or whatever, part of what you are feeling is not just the resonant frequency of the building or the contents of it, but actually all of the empathic energy of the human beings that then come to look after it, or look at it, observe it, walk through its streets, or walk through its whole situation. It's a part of how human beings identify with that energy, and therefore it becomes a perpetual resonance.
It's interesting how we talk about the religion, God and religion and that sort of thing, about that being part of these spirituality, but really a spiritual leader, like I say, shouldn't really have a religious leaning at all if they are just, if they are just being a spiritual, in inverted commas, person.
Well, that is a very interesting point, my dear friend. Absolutely so. But the way in which most of these spiritual leaders have been portrayed is that it's through an ideology of their story of their life. So it becomes, in fact, that their life creates the religion.
Well, exactly.
Yes. And so the torment is, in a sense, left as to, well, it's not necessarily that you don't believe the life. The life is obviously most plausible. The point is that the different states of structure that life has made up is really to do with the reasoning that life has gone through in order to decide, make judgment and empathy with their choice of course, of action. So is this not surely the way that human society is trying to structure themselves? So they're looking for an iconic situation to follow and structure, to enable them to live a more blessed life, so that perhaps if they do it as close as they can to their religious icon, like Jesus or Siddhartha, for example, Siddhartha's life is so very much akin to the way in which Jesus led his life. And the whole situation between the two of them is really quite amazing, because they both practiced certain specifics to do with human behavior, and both also have been instruments of their own failure, in a sense, purely and simply because human beings have followed every single state of their advancement in physical life, and therefore, in a sense, feel that it's all right to recreate that. It, in a sense, gives them permission to do that, purely and simply because their iconic status has allowed them to. I'm sure that Jesus, in his own life, or Siddhartha, in his, both felt that the whole situation of their lives was not supposed to be written down at every stage, and certainly not followed at every stage of it, and not that their reactions would always be held to highest account, purely and simply because, knowing this, that human beings would take just one little stage of their life and turn that into a whole religious sequence as well. And they could not really foresee that in their state of life. Otherwise, I'm sure that many of the situations that were created within it, they would not have made that decision or judgment.
Because everybody's not like that, isn't it? Everybody's life, I mean. Well, mind you, it might make people think twice about doing many things.
Well, absolutely so, of course, because many people use illogical routes in order to make their decisions and therefore come unstuck with exactly the wrong situation to create.
These days, I guess you have to play the system a little bit if you want to get anywhere, really, in any spiritual pathway.
Yes, so you have a situation now where many people hedge their bets. So they pick everything, from angels to warlocks and wizards to every situation, rather than allowing your own conscious mind to make decisions. You are embracing everything and saying that everything, what God's plan, whatever God is, in the likeness of or status of. The point is that you are then coming unstuck with the whole situation because, in point of fact, much of it is created through mythology and not through the basis of fact. So the problem you are then left with is, how do you sort out this morass, this mess? You are, in fact, weakening the whole structure purely and simply by accepting everything in its pathway. And I know that that's a very purist way of looking at it. However, of course, the whole structure in the spirit world is that all religion continues to manifest itself. There are still Buddhists who chant regularly. There are still people who, on our side of life, have taken the exact same roles within their life now as they had in their physical life. There are priests and nuns. There are different people of different religious structures and orders still contained within that religious structure or order. and they haven't changed one jot of it since their passing. Yet there are others who have seen the understanding and recognize the fact that what they were creating and what they were dealing with in their physical life was purely, in a sense, to uphold their own biased state, not to engage with fact, not to engage with real truthful understanding. It's part of the reason why there's such a sense of relief when people come to our side of life and find that they don't actually really have to go through all of that. They can if they want to, of course. Everyone can go through their, continue their religious extremism, whatever ism that may be, can continue to wish to denigrate women if that's what they want to do, but they'll do so in an isolated state, within their own voyage, and not actually penetrate anyone else's lives.
So, what are the qualities of a spiritual leader?
Well, it's like asking, what is the quality of colour? So, if you are looking at the qualities of a spiritual leader, you are looking for engagement, you are looking for a depth of understanding that is not at the barriers of your own. So something that's far greater than that. The resonant frequency of what you are understanding as to be purest thought is not contained within one religious structure, but encompasses all things. If you are looking for someone who is of a spiritual state, you are really seeing that this is not a situation or a case of violence against someone else or someone else's thinking. I am not violent at the way in which other people think. I look at it purely obliquely. It is either a truth in fact of their own life, and I see that and identify with it. I'm not making a judgment on other people and the way that they think. They can think that God's a sausage if they want to.
Not that you're saying you're a spiritual leader, but...
And I'm not saying that I am. Absolutely not. I am a being of the spirit world, as there are trillions of other beings of the spirit world. We have come together to try to show human beings that their very constructed ways of looking at things, at events and personalities, are obviously failing, purely and simply because they are not including the whole encompassing structure, which is a harmonic layering that needs to be adopted. It's exactly the same, my friend, if you look at a hill that's covered with trees. It's a stable environment, been like it for centuries. So you come along to the hill and you take it, denude it of trees. You will then find that erosion will quickly set in. There is no longer a root structure to hold it in place. The soils move under the influence of liquid, the liquid of the ways of life. As more and more liquid falls upon it, as more and more life falls upon humanity, the situation becomes untenable because there are no bricks, there are no structured organic layers to hold it in place. Therefore, you are seeing the way of the mountain, how it breaks down purely and simply. All mountains will eventually erode to sand if left uncovered, if left vulnerable. So if by taking all of the trees and plants from one environment and stripping it bare, you are leaving it to the deluge of water to reduce it to its finest ingredient, its finest point, which is grains of sand.
But there are spiritual people and there are spiritual leaders. Modern day time, I think it's far more difficult to get noticed. and I'm not saying that you have to have an ego, but to get noticed, to make any difference in the world without using the modern idiom, you know, the multimedia, the everything that we have in this world now. Do you know what I mean? If you want to make a difference in the world.
Yes.
So, I mean, it is a very grey area, what is a spiritual leader, isn't it?
Yes, quite so. Absolutely so. And you have this whole situation of system of change. How do you really relate to what you are trying to lead? How are you going to find true empathy with other people? How are you really going to not just be empathic with them, but also display, maybe even echo some of their own traits so that they will feel more harmonic toward you and understand your reasoning?
I mean, you might be a spiritual leader of your community because you might be the only person in that community that does lead by example.
That's actually taken the time to think.
Absolutely, that doesn't do all of the other violent things that everybody else does, and hopefully shows a better way to live and that sort of thing. So, I mean, you're a spiritual leader in your community, aren't you? In your village or whatever, in that aspect. In other people's eyes, you are.
Yes.
So it you know, because we're not talking about power here, are we? But we tend to think that, you know, especially in the romantic side of spiritual leaders and gurus, deities, and that sort of thing, that they have some powers that we don't.
Yes.
But that's not the case, is it? We all have them if we were...
Yes, every single human being has
them. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So,
quite so.
You know, but we are totally fixated by these people.
Yes. That is quite
but we look outside of ourselves for it, if you know what I mean.
Yes, always looking towards someone else rather than looking to that which is within you.
Yeah.
And that's the point, really, isn't it, of how human beings, human endeavor, wishes to move beyond its present accomplishment. If you want to move beyond your present accomplishment, friend, you take to learning some other skill or some other situation of language, maybe. You bring on the presence of how you actually dress yourself in physical life and take upon that same sense and role in a different reality. You have to actually be able to learn to do that, to cooperate with it, to learn its frequency, to learn its density. How is it that you move this hand to do this? You see, all of this is a learning situation that human beings either take within themselves or reject it. This is part of the decision process. As I say, women tend to be more focused within this dynamic, seem to be able to relate to it in a much deeper way.
So look within, basically. I think we better wind it up now. I'm not sure what time we started. I don't know if the boys will beep us if we're going over or if it's time. Anyway, I think it's probably around that area.
Well, very well then.
But, it's been absolutely fascinating. Very interesting, I think. And so look within, don't look outside of yourself.
Because it's there all the time. That's my point, really. The whole situation is that people look to others' lives in order to find the resonant frequency. But in fact, it's there within them all the time. You just have to dispel them that you've dragged along with you.
Okay, thank you, Gregory.
Yes, thank you so much. God bless.
I'd like to thank Ursa for her show topic tonight. I think that was really, really interesting. And if you'd like to join us again next week, we'd love to have you. And until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.